Well, you're talking, but it's not doing the little waveform things.
It's just you. It's just you, bad boy. Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. Usually with me in person is Max, but right now we are on a Zoom call. We're under quarantine. We're not allowed to touch each other, which that kind of works out for me because you were getting kind of creepy and handsy the last time we recorded.
I was getting handsy that one. That was interesting.
That was strange. Yeah. Out of character, but it was also a little flattering. Anyway, how are you doing?
I'm doing weird. It's a weird time we live in right now.
It really is.
Yeah, everything's very odd. I had to make my own little office. I've been really appreciating going on walks, which is nice.
You live in a heavily populated area. I would be worried about going on walks. Are you worried at all, or have you been able to keep distancing?
So that's very fun. Whenever you pass someone on the street, there's kind of a like unspoken thing we're at right now where like people will be walking on the sidewalk. And then when you come up towards the other person, whoever's on the right goes onto the tree lawn and whoever's on the left just walks on the yard
right
of the house you're passing. And it's like, all right, I guess this is what we're doing now.
So you get pretty close to 6 feet there.
Yeah, the sidewalk is in between you.
Yeah, there you go. Making the most of it. Which is what we're doing, too. We're making the most of a shitty, weird time and recording remotely. So
yeah.
Thanks for your flexibility with doing this, man. This is, I know that technology has not always been, like, our forte with this podcast. That we've been, like, recording on a laptop through Audacity for a lot of episodes. And, like, we've come a long way. We're getting high tech. When we're able to do video calls for this podcast, like, I feel like a more official podcast in a way, you know?
Yeah, like, this is the first time I think we've ever recorded with two mics, which is fun.
It really is, which we probably should have been doing from the get-go, but we didn't know how, so
isolating our sound better.
Yeah. So this very well might be the best-sounding episode of Pre-Dead Boys yet.
I'm still using Audacity over here, so we'll see how that gets. I don't know if it's going to go well.
There's nothing wrong with that. We'll stop boring you, the listener, with the chit chat about technology, and we'll start talking about what we came here to talk about, which is death.
It is. Can I tell you about one more boring thing really quick?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think you'll think this is very funny. So like normally when I'm in my office, I can like stand up and leave and walk around, and like there's a bathroom on like the fourth floor of my building that I like going to. So I get to go up four flights of stairs.
Cause you're real loud when you go poop.
Yeah. Be very quiet. But I can't do that at my house. So I've had to figure out a way to stand. So I currently am using a standing desk that is not an actual standing desk. It's my laptop that is placed on top of a microwave, which is on top of my counter.
You know, so I like that for several reasons. One of which is easy access to a microwave.
It's very nice.
Do you use the microwave while you're working?
No, because it scares me. Because that's like, the microwave is at like tummy and groin height. And so that is a little worrisome.
I don't know how much stock to put into a lot of what I've heard about. Hey, you shouldn't like have a cell phone. If you're a guy, you shouldn't have a cell phone near your like, you know, your private parts. Have you heard this? Like, yeah. I can't determine if there's science to it or if it's just a huge conspiracy theory. But I feel like if there's any truth to that at all, then a microwave next to your stuff is even worse.
Just for like hours at a time, too.
Yeah. Yeah. While you're working 8 hours a day. Just
it's got a little like that, like crisscrossy black thing on the front, which I don't know what that is or how that
it protects you from everything.
If anything, it just makes it harder to see when I'm being like a dumb idiot with my face like in front of the microwave and trying to make sure my stuff doesn't.
As you're quietly and slowly radiating your face.
Yeah. I'm just like, is my Hot Pocket done yet?
Perfect. Should we talk about death?
Yeah, we should.
Okay, Max, what have you put together for us today?
So I was doing this and I was trying to figure out like, what should we do? Like, how should we engage with this podcast and recording like in a quarantine situation, you know? Mm-hmm. And I listened to a lot of other podcasts, and some podcasts aren't talking about coronavirus at all.
Acting just, like it doesn't exist.
Yeah, just kind of trying to give people like a sense of normalcy. And some podcasts are talking about it and are engaging with how out of joint everything feels. And I thought that it would be kind of cool to engage with the fact that a lot of the world is very weird right now.
Yeah.
And people need something to do. And so I figured with like quarantine and shelter in place orders and people without like shows or like your gym is closed, I assume.
It is. And it's fucking killing me.
Like they, without having stuff like that to do, I wanted to keep people occupied beyond like the 50 or 60 minutes that we have this podcast going. So that's why if you are listening and you reach under your seat, I have purchased everyone a copy of Breath of the Wild. No.
That would keep you occupied for a very long time.
I can't afford to do that. That'd be, although with the stimulus, I don't know. We'll see what happens with that.
With a one-time $1,000 check, you're going to buy everyone a copy of Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I hope this is our least popular episode by hundreds.
Oh, sorry, clarification. That was Breath of the Wild for Wii U, not for Nintendo Switch. And it does not have a case. It's just the disc. So, yeah, sorry about that. But it's free, so you get what you get. Right. Yeah.
So what I actually wanted to do is record an episode that gives people something to do beyond the 50 to 60 minutes our podcast is running. And I don't really know what to call it, but this is basically an episode about how to stay death positive and engaged with cool deathy stuff in quarantine and lockdown.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah, it's going to be a little weird, but this is a weird time. So
it absolutely is.
I guess speaking of weird times, we can now inaugurate the first ever distance version of what we're about to do with the first ever socially distanced pre-dead boys crack into the topic moment brought to you by different seltzers for the first time ever.
So I got my old faithful cranberry lime polar seltzer.
I've got a La Kroger.
Hell yeah. Let's go. We may be several miles apart right now, but the seltzer does. I feel it creates some kind of spiritual link between us. A link between worlds, if you will.
Wait till I drop off one of those Polar Junior cans in your mailbox.
Oh, yeah, those are wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to have a whole pre-Dead Boys episode about that. You need to teach me all about that.
Very weird. Whew. Get my lumbar support going again. I have never missed an office chair more than I do now. Good God.
Hunching over on a... Is that a couch?
It's worse. It's a futon.
Ooh. The single worst piece of furniture for your posture.
Just metal bars.
Yeah.
Behind my back. So, as I've mentioned, and as I'm sure a lot of listeners out there feel, I'm teleworking, and it is really difficult when you're teleworking to get your blood flowing, feel like you're not just static all day. Mm. So what my wife and I have been doing is taking a lot of after work walks, just going outside, doing a bunch of walking around. I think that also helps to kind of leave the workday behind, you know?
Yeah.
Because normally I get to sit on the bus for half an hour on my way back home, but now I just close my laptop and I'm like, all right, I guess I'm home.
Yeah, you need that time to decompress a little bit before you go and do other stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, a thing we've been doing has been walking through the ravine by where we live. Mm-hmm. We've been spending a lot of time in ravines while we've been socially distancing.
Okay.
So it's a pretty gorge. And sometimes when it rains, there's a waterfall, which is nice. But a lot of things are closed, at least in Ohio now. But our governor has encouraged people to still get out and enjoy parks. He's like, you can go outside and walk. Like, please spend time in parks. Use a trail. Like, don't touch other people on the trail, but like, go walk around outside. And a thing that is outside and not closed is cemeteries.
That's true.
It's pretty cool. Have you ever spent or like really spent time walking around any of our cemeteries here in Columbus?
So I just moved, as you and I talked about earlier. Oh. Before I moved, my house was right next to a cemetery that I would frequently jog through. So not quite the same thing, right? Of like hanging out in a cemetery, but I would jog through it like, you know, once every 1 or 2 weeks.
Yeah, you talk about Union Cemetery?
Yeah. And it was great because I would feel like I was dying when I was running, and then I would be surrounded by actual dead people and realize, you know, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. Quit being a baby, Dorian.
So I love walking in cemeteries. They're usually like super peaceful, really well maintained. That one you're talking about has like these nice like winding paths. It's really pretty.
Yeah.
And I imagine if you're like listening to this podcast, you're pretty cool with casually strolling through cemeteries. I like to make it a point where like if I go to a new city and it's like a big city and they have a cool cemetery, I'll go visit that. And I imagine most of our listeners are pretty cool with that too.
I would imagine so, yeah.
If you're not cool with walking around cemeteries,
then you're not cool. Don't talk to us.
Throw your phone in a lake.
No, just kidding. We still
live. That's what we're going to talk about right now. And hopefully it gives you something to do and hopes to see cemeteries in like a cool new way.
Yeah. Let's go walk around. Let's talk about walking around in the cemetery.
And then we can walk around them individually later.
Separately. Distanced.
So cemeteries do fall into a couple basic landscape designs. And I've wanted to do like a full episode on cemetery types for a while, but we're going to jump the gun a little bit and do an emergency segment of this one on it. For my money, the best cemeteries to walk around in are called rural cemeteries. And I know we both live in urban areas, like a big city. But even if you're in an urban area, you're still probably pretty close to a like quote-unquote rural cemetery. Because when we talk about these, rural is kind of a misnomer.
It's also my least favorite word to try and pronounce.
No, that's unfortunate.
Rural.
Because I'm going to make you give us a quick definition of what a rural cemetery is real quick. So,
damn it,
sorry,
Max.
Buddy.
Always with these pronunciations. What's next? More Scottish?
No Scottish in this one.
All right. I forgive you then. A rural cemetery, also known as a garden cemetery, is a cemetery development plan developed in the mid-1800s in the United States and Europe. As the Industrial Revolution caused cities to grow and develop, overcrowding, land management, and health concerns forced burials to move outside of rapidly expanding cities, hence the term rural. These cemeteries were intended to be visited and featured well-designed monuments and memorials, as well as carefully considered landscaping efforts. Many residents of cities were worried about losing touch with nature due to increased urbanization, and rural cemeteries were heralded as pristine and peaceful environments where city dwellers could reconnect with a more pastoral setting.
They're very pleasant. And even like you mentioned, they're not always rural. They're also known as garden cemeteries. I really like the term pastoral cemeteries, which basically just means it's like in a pasture.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'll stick with that as we go forward, just if you hate rural so much.
Pastoral. That's easier to say. It sounds prettier too.
So similar to the mid 1800s in America, things are changing in kind of a weird way for us right now. If you lived in a big city in the 1800s, you were starting to see a lot of factories pop up. You were spending a lot more time indoors because you weren't farming for food. You were like hanging out in a factory and like making a brick or something like that for 8 hours a day. Actually, more like 12 hours a day back then.
Labor standards were not as well established then.
But, you know, it in the same way that I get kind of stressed out being cooped up in my house all day and not being able to like go see my friends or grab a drink after work or something like that. People in the mid 1800s felt really stressed out by not being able to like see trees and nature for the first time in like human history, really. If you were living in New York City, factories were popping up and there was a lot more concrete and steel. And all of a sudden it wasn't like, oh, I can see trees if I go walk 15 minutes away from my house, you know?
Right.
It's also very weird because public parks weren't really a thing until about this time, which I always found kind of surprising, you know? I was like, it seems like parks are always, have always been there.
So there was just no need for them because you're just like, if you want to see nature, walk that way. It's right there.
Yeah.
Up until all of these factories get built and your life, you know, has changed so much that, yeah, I can see how that would be a rapid change. It's hard to imagine for sure, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially you and I living in an urban area. It's kind of unthinkable that there would just be enough nature that would necessitate, like, you don't need parks. There don't need to be any parks anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of cities that people exist in now have city parks scattered around. Columbus does. Mm-hmm. And Columbus has some pretty good ones.
Our metro parks rock.
Yeah, if you're ever in the city.
This is not a podcast about Columbus metro parks, but for what it's worth, they rock. Come to Columbus.
So, I mean, you can imagine, like, if you were in Columbus before parks were really a big thing, though, and before labor laws were in place, just imagine factory owners being like, I'm going to make every bit of land in this city a factory.
Mm-hmm.
So, because people were building factories on every square inch of land they could find, that meant that people were running out of space for burials, for cemeteries. And while people were running out of space for burials, they were also feeling anxious about not having green space. So these pastoral cemeteries were developed to basically kill two birds with one stone. You give people a place to reconnect with nature, and you also have a solution to what to do with all the dead bodies that are starting to pile up in your city.
Yeah.
And so like when I talk about running out of space, I mean this very, very literally. Like in the mid 1800s, things were getting rough. So I found an excerpt here from a Pennsylvania State Supreme Court case from 1878 titled Craig versus First Presbyterian Church of Pittsburgh. And this is in relation to a complaint made by a man named Isaac Craig, and he sued this church he attended in Pittsburgh because their graveyard was maintained so poorly.
The ground in controversy was a gift from the Penns. It was conveyed by John Penn and John Penn Jr. to the trustees of the Presbyterian Congregation of Pittsburgh by deed, dated September 24th, 1787. The ground was originally the western half of an old public burying ground, used as a place of interment for a period of 35 years before the Penns conveyed it to the church. The French used the ground as a place of sepulcher from 1753 to 1758, whilst they held Fort Duquesne. Afterwards, the ground was used for the same purpose by the British and colonial troops stationed at Fort Pitt, and subsequently by the American troops during the Revolutionary War. It was also used by the inhabitants from the first settlement of the county. In the course of time, the ground became so densely populated with dead bodies that it was scarcely possible to open a new grave without disturbing the remains of someone previously interred.
Yeah. So basically what this church was dealing with is their burial grounds were on a space that had been occupied through multiple wars, and war kills a lot of people. So there were already a lot of people being buried there from war. And then it was used as a burial ground for basically anyone who's a Presbyterian in the city of Pittsburgh. So a lot of people were getting buried there as a result of that, too. And when you can't bury someone new without accidentally digging into the grave of someone already there, you are going to have some issues. That's not great.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so, you know, even at this point, some of America's older burial grounds were already starting to run into trouble. You had cemeteries in towns like Boston and New York that had been in continuous operation since those cities were settled in like the 1600s. And they were just running out of space. So these cities really started pushing for cemeteries to exist outside of city limits, where they had enough space but could still be accessible to visitors. Like, you remember when we talked about the London death train? Like, yep. So that cemetery was far outside of London. Like, it was so far you had to take a train. These cemeteries were constructed so that people could still walk there.
Okay. Even you're talking about the new rural cemeteries were still close enough that they could walk to them? Okay. Because I would imagine that would be the first complaint. Why are you building these cemeteries so far outside of the city? Now we can't get there. Well, they're close enough. You can walk to them.
Yeah. These are typically built about 3 to 5 miles outside of what the city limits were at the time, which is why you get some cities that have them where they originally were placed outside of city limits. And then as the city has expanded, it has re-encompassed what was previously a rural cemetery.
Right. That's interesting to me on two levels. That one, the thought of any of our urban areas being like for the average person, 3 to 5 miles being like a comfortable walking distance is kind of crazy. Like, you have to take time out of your schedule to go on a 3 to 5 mile walk nowadays. That's not a common thing for like the everyday person to want to do. And also 3 to 5 miles outside of the city limit of where we live in Columbus is like piles of suburbs, and some of those suburbs are so big they look like their own city. I mean, you used to live in Westerville, which was like trying so hard to be its own city, trying so hard to not be Columbus and be its own thing, even though it was basically
it's got
the
three
same
high
thing,
schools,
but it was huge.
You know,
like, I mean, that's 3 to 5 miles outside of Columbus city limits, parts of Westerville at least. So it's like, I have a hard time imagining a rural cemetery existing anywhere in that space, just with how much stuff is already there. Interesting how they were able to like come up with a solution like this back
and,
then.
I mean, that's why you see, it's kind of weird when you see a pastoral cemetery in a city, is because, you know, if you built something in the 1800s that had like long winding paths and big trees that was protected, it may have re-become the only green space accessible in that city.
Hmm.
We have that in Columbus with Green Lawn Cemetery.
Right.
In big, just the middle cemetery of roads and highways. But, you know, absolutely, like a lot of these, it features these big winding paths and old trees, like old growth trees. The first one built in the United States was Mount Auburn Cemetery, which is only 4 miles west of Boston. And when you look at like a road map of Boston, have you ever been to Boston?
No. I've heard the roads are crazy.
They are wild because they're just kind of built in the way that people walked for a long time. And so this cemetery was dedicated in 1831, and they really wanted to push back against the harsh, rigid industrial changes that were happening in Boston. They kind of tried to take back the footpath route of roads. So I have given you a picture of the design plan for the Mount Union Cemetery or Mount Auburn Cemetery.
Good Lord. This kind of looks like it's almost like a black and white drawing, like brain tissue of all the coiled winding.
Or like the circulatory ridiculousness. System.
Yeah, it's very, that's very spindly and dense and tangled. And I would have a hellish time trying to find one particular person in the cemetery.
Yeah, I mean,
that would be brutal.
That's why when you go to a lot of these, they have big fold-out maps they can give you which is neat. If you look at this in the upper right, that kind of gray area, that's just a big pond. So it kind of gives you a sense of the scale of this cemetery. Yeah, all this undisturbed tree growth as well. There's a photo of it too. You know, a little more. But just really beautiful, like big hanging willow trees. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. You know, we talked about Union Cemetery by the Ohio State College campus, and that's a very pretty cemetery, but it looks like at least my picture of a lot of cemeteries where for the most part there are trees, but those trees are very segmented and separated from everything else and like sparse. There's, you know, one tree and then dozens of graves and then one more tree. But this is like, this creates a very lovely visual picture. The way that it's arranged with the willow trees kind of cascading over some monuments, and this looks like a comfortable, peaceful, lovely place to
hang
out.
And that was the original intention of it, you know? When people were planning these, it was, we want a space where we can go and walk and picnic and reconnect with nature. And even though it feels weird to us to be in a cemetery, well, it doesn't feel weird to us, but it feels weird to a lot of people today.
we're goth goobers. We're going to hang out there no matter
people
what.
People in the 1800s would go to places like this and make a day of it. They would have a day trip and just walk around because they were decorated with these beautiful monuments and copses of trees. And if you ever get a chance, you should go to Greenlawn in Columbus, because there's this big like wrought iron bridge that just goes over a footpath at one point. And it's gorgeous, you know? It's like, it's just pretty. You like forget you're in a cemetery.
Man, I haven't been to Greenlawn in a really, I remember going there as a kid, I think for a funeral, but yeah.
I've been to really beautiful examples of these in like Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, New York City has a bunch. Cleveland has some really cool ones, actually. A lot of weird Pennsylvania small towns. But yeah, Greenlawn is very, very cool. It's also neat because this is usually where like the famous people from a city are buried.
In these really cool cemeteries?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've been to the cemetery in Cleveland where James Garfield is buried. He's got like a big cool monument there.
The is
president,
that
the former president.
Yeah.
He
really
loves
likes
lasagna,
lasagna
dude.
That guy?
He's actually buried in a tomb that's shaped like a big lasagna.
Okay. What were those coffins called? Those like decorative big sculpture coffins? The
fantasy
African
coffins.
Yeah, so he's in a big fantasy coffin in the
like
shape
an above
of a lasagna.
Lasagna
a pan of lasagna.
The cemetery where Rick James is buried in Buffalo is also very pretty. It's like kind of the nicest thing in Buffalo. Like, apologies to any of our listeners in Buffalo, but the cemetery is the coolest thing I've seen there.
Sorry.
There's this big cool deer statue in the middle of it that's made of copper, and so it's all turned green at this point. So it's like this massive statue of a deer that's the color of the Statue of Liberty in the middle of a cemetery. It rules. It's like Buffalo jumps up in my list of cool cities because of it.
Hey, Buffalo's all right. Go get some spot coffee.
Did not go there.
You're not going to go? You're not going to go to Buffalo? Spot coffee is a coffee shop there. It's really good. You should try it instead of being a fucking bigot against Buffalonians. I don't know if they're called Buffalonians. I might have been more offensive than you were just now by calling them Buffalonians.
Buffalites. But yeah, I mean, these cemeteries are cool because they're peaceful and they have a lot of green space. They are also all still open right now. You can maintain a lot of distance between you and other people at these.
Yeah. And cool sculptures.
And also
like,
the people who work at them are paid to landscape them and to do a good job, and they care about them. So maybe in these trying times, you can go to a cemetery and take a quick walk around and just leave a comment card saying, "This was really pretty. Thank you for maintaining this land."
Yeah, I like that idea.
But I also understand that some people are uncomfortable with even leaving their house to like walk around right now. That's totally fine. Our shelter in place that we have here in Ohio It like encourages you to go take walks, but I know people feel differently. So, you know, I don't want to overlook people like that. And I wanted to give a shout out to Wikipedia for providing a lot of information for this podcast. Gets episodes in this podcast like rolling. A lot of episodes are inspired by something I see on Wikipedia and go, oh, that's cool. We owe a lot to Wikipedia in our lives.
Is this a Wikipedia commercial?
I'm not going to ask you to donate money. Me to donate money. But maybe in these trying times, if you're not going to be, you know, out buying cups of coffee, you know, it only costs like the amount that you pay for your daily coffee to support Wikipedia.
If everyone chipped in one coffee, give that coffee to someone you know who reads Wikipedia, right? Is that how you support them?
I open up a
little banner ads,
a Wikipedia tab in my browser and pour coffee onto it.
That's very helpful. That's very constructive. No, but yeah, Wikipedia is a great initial resource where it can get the ball rolling on figuring out at least where to look for more information. Maybe not necessarily the best source of information in and of itself, not the most reliable, but yeah, I mean, how many descriptions have we read from Wikipedia? How many times have we like kickstarted this whole thing with a Wikipedia article? So yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Well, I mean, this isn't about donation. But, you know, I love Wikipedia rabbit holes, which is just when you find an article and then you can jump to a bunch of other articles from that. So if you are really focused on staying inside and not going outside at all right now, what we're going to talk about next is a list that I've compiled of some really good death-focused Wikipedia articles that you can spend like a day or two just wandering around.
Okay.
A little
digital wandering.
It's not going to be exhaustive by any means, but I think it'll be fun. So an old faithful one that I wanted to start off with is one of the most like infamous weird Wikipedia articles, which is list of inventors killed by their own inventions. Are you familiar with it?
The irony alone is hilarious.
Oh my God, it rules.
No, I'm not.
So it's an article that categorizes short biographies of inventors who invented something. And then while like testing it out or whatever, it killed them.
Why am I laughing at that?
There are a couple entries that are kind of entertaining. So I'm going to have you read a couple right now, if you don't mind.
Oh, I don't mind one bit. Jimmy Heseldon, a British entrepreneur who died in 2010 from injuries apparently sustained falling from a cliff while riding his own product, the Segway personal transport system.
Isn't that wild? Did you know that?
Yeah, I remember hearing about this a few years ago. Yeah, because the irony is just so good, so choice. Do I wish death upon the guy? Not at all. But, I mean, we are in one of many cities that have stupid Segway tours constantly swarming around downtown and, like, obstructing traffic and just generally looking really dorky. And there's Segway tours, too, of, like, here's the building where, like, Nationwide Insurance does business. And you're just like, who the fuck cares? So I feel like you can roast Segway a little bit. There's some room to roast them. You know, Mr. Heseldon, I'm sorry for your unfortunate accident. It is hilarious. And I know that by laughing at you, I increase the likeliness that I'm going to have a really silly death.
Karmic.
Like killed by my own podcast somehow.
Choke on your mic or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oops. Yeah. Sorry for laughing, but it is kind of funny. Should I break off another one here? Some more funny deaths?
Yeah, give me another one.
I shouldn't say that.
These aren't even the funniest ones yet. We got some more coming up.
Oh, okay, cool. Henry Smolinski died in 1973. He was killed during a test flight of the AVE Mizar, a flying car based on the Ford Pinto and the sole product of the company he founded.
And there's a picture of the flying car he invented there.
Now, yeah, Max, you have sent me a photo of what looks like a Pinto with a plane duct taped to the top of it.
That is what it is. Like an old boxy 70s car with just wings for some reason.
That is incredible. That is incredible. How could you look at that and not just think, that's a death trap?
I also don't understand how you could look at that and not say, I want to read a little more about this bizarre car. Like,
before I jump in and fly in.
I think my favorite thing about list of inventors killed by their own inventions is not the stories about the people dying themselves, because that's kind of a bummer. But the people who died because they invented something kind of wild, like this car that got off the ground enough to kill this guy, even though it was a couple biplane wings strapped to a Ford Pinto.
It's just not a good idea. There's got to be better ways to test this thing before you just put your life on the line for it.
It's a good read. That article can be a bit of a bummer, but I wanted to put that out there just in case anyone is interested in it. And there is some cool stuff on there, you know? And those people were trying to make the world a better place. If you want to feel a little less guilty about reading this stuff, or if you want to do some like armchair forensic work, I've got another article for you, which is list of unusual deaths.
Unusual deaths.
Unusual deaths.
Okay.
So this one's very fun because it has a lot of examples from like very old timey times when all these accounts are like probably pretty apocryphal and people were like, well, no one's going to remember how my political enemies died in the future. So I'm going to write something really embarrassing about them.
Right. Some total slander. Maybe not even true.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we've got some very, very bizarre means of death here that I'm going to have you read through. And this article is long. Like, it is pages and pages of things like this.
The Greek philosopher Heraclitus was said to have been devoured by dogs after smearing himself with cow manure in an attempt to cure his dropsy.
I like that the dogs devoured him.
Yeah, because dogs are always eating cow shit.
That one feels like it was a political slander, but...
Is that a cure for dropsy? If I get dropsy, should I try that?
I don't even know what dropsy is.
I don't either. But if I get it, I guess this is the first thing I'll try since it's the only thing I've heard that might work. All right, I'll break off another one here. One account reports the Greek playwright Sophocles died of suffocation after reading aloud a lengthy monologue from the end of his play Antigone without pausing to take a breath for commas or punctuation.
I don't even know how that's possible.
Oh man, he died reading poetry.
Like,
if that's not a poetic death, I don't know what is.
I don't know. I guess I don't want to kill you with show notes by just giving you really long paragraphs to read and deleting all the commas.
Please don't delete the commas. That's the only thing saving me.
I like that it's like an early version of Anchorman, where like Sophocles would only read what was written.
It really is.
And if you didn't include commas, he would just die.
That's honestly funnier than Anchorman.
Like he realized at a certain point and was like, oh no, I don't have any commas for a while here.
But he was committed to delivering it with the gravitas that it needed. He was committed to the artistic expression above even his own life. Is there nothing admirable about that to you, Max?
That is really admirable. That's kind of the beauty of this weird page on Wikipedia. But, you know, it's not all admirable. These next two I'm going to have you read are not as committed to the artistic form as Sophocles was.
One ancient account of the death of Chrysippus, a 3rd century BC Greek Stoic philosopher, tells that he died of laughter after he saw a donkey eating his figs. He told a slave to give the donkey neat wine to drink, to wash them down with, and then, having laughed too much, he died. Yo, that donkey's eating figs!
Like, I know we unfairly dunk on old-timey people a lot, but if watching a donkey eat food that, like, an animal is supposed to eat because it's not like a bag of Cheetos is going to kill you because you're laughing so hard, maybe that's okay.
That's natural selection at work, I think. Eliminating the goofballs. So far this is the closest to how I might die, is laughing so hard at something stupid that's not actually funny, but it's funny to me. And I like that the thing that really killed him was give the donkey wine to wash it down with, and that sent him.
Like just watching a drunk donkey try and walk around.
He was done at that point. Too funny. All right, should I read about Martin of Aragon?
Yeah, let's get Martin of Aragon going here.
Martin of Aragon died from a combination of indigestion and uncontrollable laughing. According to tradition, Martin was suffering from indigestion on account of eating an entire goose when his favorite jester, Bora, entered the king's bedroom. When Martin asked Bora where he had been, the jester replied with, "Out of the next vineyard, where I saw a young deer hanging by his tail from a tree, as if someone had so punished him for stealing figs." This joke caused the king to die from laughter. Bro, what the fuck is up with figs being the most hilarious thing?
I have
kings,
no clue.
All of these people.
I like that this guy ate an entire goose as well, which is maybe funnier than the original joke even.
There is no shame in making a single meal out of an entire bird, Max. Okay? Having partaken in the rotisserie chicken many times, it is an efficient and delicious meal. So no shame in eating an entire... A goose is a lot bigger than a chicken, though.
A goose is a lot bigger. It's such a gift that this Wikipedia article gave us to imagine a guy laying on his bed being like, "Oh, my tummy hurts really bad." And there's just like a full goose skeleton laying next to him.
And then some jackass is like, "Yeah, but what about a deer that got executed for eating figs?"
And then he just dies.
And he's like, this reminds me, there's a meme, my current favorite meme. I can't say exactly because it has a racial slur, but it's just this ongoing, like, people riffing off of the phrase, "this N-word eating beans." And it's usually like somebody pointing and laughing at someone else being like, "this motherfucker eating beans." I don't know how it started, but every time I see it come up on my Twitter feed, I lose my fucking mind.
Well, that's very convenient.
This is the early version.
This
dude's eating figs.
Even toad ungulate is eating figs is what is really getting these people going. There's a whole article also on death from laughter. So I guess if you're like really invested, you can go read that too.
That sounds like a gold mine.
It's really not. It's very scientific. And it's like, how does this happen?
Last two. Okay, here we go. The deacon Saint Lawrence was roasted alive on a giant grill during the persecution of Valerian. The poet Prudentius claimed that he joked with his tormentors, quote, "Turn me over, I'm done on this side." He is now the patron saint of cooks, chefs, and comedians.
Also very good. I like that this guy had some levity during his execution.
"Turn me over, I'm done on this side." Is this guy a pre-Dead Boys hero? Hall of Heroes?
I guess. I don't know what else he did.
This is apocryphal, so it's not confirmed that he actually did this.
I really love... So, as a former Catholic, I love the, like, patron saint mechanics. Like, how they'll just pick out things that are, like, tangentially related from the lives of these people. And then they become the go-between for anyone who's a cook, a chef, or a comedian, and God. It's like, okay, so he was roasted alive, and he told a joke while he was doing it. So God's like, "You know what? You're kind of funny. So anyone who's a comedian and tries to talk to me, they've got to go through you first." I like that.
I kind of like, this seems like the early, the church doing this seems like the early version of the basic white girl saying, that's my spirit animal. Whiskey is my spirit animal. It seemed like the church was doing the early version of this where it's like, oh, St. Lawrence is like my patron saint, dude, for sure.
My patron spirit animal.
Love that, dude. All right, last one. Clement Vallandigham, a lawyer and Ohio politician defending a man accused of murder, accidentally shot himself and died while demonstrating how the victim might have accidentally shot himself. His client was cleared.
It's a nice little pick-me-up at the end there.
Dude, he died doing the best possible job.
Yeah.
He died for his client. That's amazing. Like, this guy is somehow simultaneously a fucking moron, but also did his job so well. Kudos to him.
I like that they had to reconvene court after dealing with all this, and the judge must have just been like, well, all right, I guess you didn't murder that guy.
Like, so at the risk of sounding insensitive, we are all on the same page now, right? Like, you saw that. You saw that, right? Well done, Mr. Vallandigham. Is that how you say it?
Vallandigham.
Vallandigham. Best last name so far.
Got a good one.
What a hero.
That whole article is full of, like, just gold and, like, weird stuff, bizarre old-timey things people were doing. It does continue through the present day.
Mm-hmm.
And it can get a little dark and heavy as it gets newer. Because sometimes people get like kind of loose with unusual ways and they kind of over document and it can turn into kind of a bummer.
Eey.
But there are a lot of like apocryphal stories. Like there was this Roman guy who walked outside and he was bald and an eagle was carrying a turtle and then dropped the turtle on his head because it thought he was a rock. And that's how he died.
Maybe a good project to take on. If you are sitting here listening to this and you're in quarantine trying to find something productive to do, you would be doing the Lord's work by editing together in a single article or whatever all of the funny instances of people dying from laughter or accidentally killing themselves and removing all the bummers. That would be a fun, not fun for you because you'd have to plow through all of those and read every single one. But if you are up for the challenge, this would be very entertaining.
It's got bummers. So let's close out with a couple of solidly goofier things that are still death related, like the birthday effect. You know what the birthday effect is?
I don't think so. What is that?
All right. How about you read it to us? How about you describe it to me?
The birthday effect is a statistical phenomenon where an individual's likelihood of death appears to increase on or close to their birthday. The birthday effect has been seen in studies of general populations in England and Wales, Switzerland, Ukraine, and the United States, as well as in smaller populations such as Major League Baseball players. You son of a bitch. We went this whole episode without talking about baseball. You could not make it until the end of this episode to bring up baseball.
Baseball's not even happening right now. I just had to sneak it in there.
So sneaky. You know what? I appreciate this. And I know you're probably hurting with no baseball content.
We'll talk about the Major League Baseball player breakdown in a second. But this is genuinely very weird. You've got a birthday coming up, right?
My birthday is at the end of April, which is, in some experts' opinion, going to be the height of this coronavirus epidemic in the United States. I better get my living will in order, huh?
You better, especially if we got to contend with the birthday effect now.
God.
So this page lists a couple possible explanations for why this happens, but it's like very strange and no one has really pinned it down yet. The baseball player thing is especially weird because it's one of the most like why are so many of these people dying on their birthdays? A lot of that stems from a journal article titled Mortality Salience of Birthdays on Day of Death in the Major Leagues. So because I'm very bored right now, I read this article and it was really interesting. So what they did is they took a study of all Major League Baseball players who had died before 2004. So that totaled 7,368 people. So based on probability, the chances of you dying on your birthday are a 1 in 365.25 chance for leap day. So, you know, like a 1 in 365 right. chance.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if you take that 1 in 365 chance and apply it to the pool of Major League Baseball players, you would expect about 20 baseball players to have died on their own birthdays. But 34 had.
Only 34 baseball players?
Wait. Sorry, man.
Max, you know how I am with math. I need you to spell this out for me.
You would expect 20 people to have died on their own birthday. Okay. That fits with the odds. But in reality, 34 baseball players have died on their own birthdays.
So what percentage does that shake out to? Because that is more, but is it significantly more?
It is 150% more than it would be. Almost double, which is very strange.
That is a lot.
And the researchers can't really pin down why. They talked about maybe it's like reckless behavior increases on days around your birthday and stuff. But if you are into like death and math, that might be a kind of a cool article to check out. The birthday effect.
We call that the Max McKenna Venn diagram.
That's true.
Death and math.
It's very true. So we can wrap this up here, but I know we talk about death a lot on this podcast. And when you say a word a whole bunch of times in a row, it starts to sound like a nonsense word. Like you say the word door like 12 times and it doesn't sound like a real word anymore.
Yeah.
So what if we stopped saying death and started using different terms?
I'm all ears. You got an idea?
Yeah, so for like a final Wikipedia rabbit hole we can give you, try list of expressions related to death. So for this one, I'm going to have you scroll through this article and try and find a couple terms that you kind of connect with.
So this is a very long list. Some of these are very specific, like toaster bath. You could imagine what that describes. We got some old classics here that I always really appreciate. Sleeping with the fishes.
Send to Belize is very good.
Send to
One
Belize.
One of my favorites is wearing a pine overcoat, parentheses, i.e. a wooden coffin.
Oh. They're really spelling it out for you there.
To take the last train to glory. To ride the pale horse.
That one's dope.
A really good one is to pop one's clogs.
Pop one's clogs?
Yeah, I guess it's a English thing. And pop means like sell or pawn.
Okay. So you're selling one's clogs.
Well, this just says, a 19th century working man might tell his family to take his clothes to the pawn shop to pay for his funeral, with his clogs among the most valuable items.
Get some cash for them clogs.
That's a good one.
I've always really appreciated shuffle off this mortal coil. That just sounds real epic.
That's a good one. Kick the calendar.
Kick the calendar. Ooh, we got an Australian one here. Pass in one's alley. Do any of our Australian listeners actually say that? Get in touch with us.
And like a thing that you should do, especially if you're not American, is check this article out and be like, what here is actually used? Like, I have never heard hop on the last rattler before.
I was just looking at hop the twig. Go bung is also Australian. but it also means to fail or to go bankrupt. I like go bung. Go bung. This is a good list. I will digest this in its entirety at some other time, because now I'm just mesmerized looking through all of its contents.
And that's kind of what I was hoping. I was hoping that we could give people who are stuck in quarantine just a couple things on Wikipedia to really just go to town on, you know, spend a lot of time looking through.
These are good resources. I'll link them all in the episode description as well.
At the end of a lot of these articles, there's one of those little boxes, and it's just on death. And if you hit show on that, there's a whole bunch of articles you can dig through on there. A lot of great stuff. So feel free to dig through there and send us anything cool you find.
Yeah, I like that idea. Making the most of this long break that we all have. At least trying to learn something, and there's no need for us to just be like completely frozen by the fear of like what's going on around us.
No.
We're alive. We are able to learn about death and deal with it head on by reading goofy Wikipedia articles about silly people.
Or go take a walk in the cemetery. Either one.
Yeah, do that too. Thanks for putting this together, Max. Some really good resources here. I might throw in on a slightly more serious note. I know that Caitlin Doty of the Order of the Good Death posted a really good article about how to talk about death with your family and friends in the midst of a crisis.
Oh, cool.
One thing I really love about Caitlin Doty in general is that she covers a lot of the really heavy side of discussing death and death positivity. And a lot of times we don't quite touch on that because that's not really our, you know, we keep it lighthearted here. We keep it pretty goofy. So if you're cool with that, I might link to that in the episode description too, because I feel like that's kind of a handy resource. And she made some cool points in there, yeah, that I thought were pretty helpful for this weird ass time that the entire world is in right now. But we definitely need some lighthearted shit too. And I do appreciate that. Thanks for putting this together, Max.
Yeah, no problem.
And thank you for listening to our podcast. Maybe you didn't have anything better to do because you're stuck at home, but there's a lot of shit on Netflix and Hulu.
Books you could be reading, video games you could be playing.
Mostly video game that you could be playing. The one video game.
Animal Crossing.
That's right. Anyway, we would love to hear from you, especially just now more than ever. Max and I would love to read messages, yep, from you guys and just have any contact with people in the outside world at all. And you can do that a few different ways. We are at PreDeadBoys on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us predeadboys@gmail.com. We have a Facebook group that you can join. Just search PreDeadBoys podcast on Facebook. And you can join our Discord. Our Discord server has actually been really active, and there's been a lot of helpful information sharing about COVID and all the stuff going on, but also sharing music and fun things to do and cute animal photos. And it's been cool having this little community of friends through the podcast that, yeah, we're able to kind of go through this together a little bit. So just want to give a shout out to everybody who's in the Discord group right now and how cool you've continued to be. But if you would like an invite to that Discord, send us a message on any of the outlets that I just mentioned, and we will hook you up there. Max, sometimes we goof and we need to make a correction in the podcast.
Oh no.
Kat, a faithful listener of the podcast, has sent us a brief correction and some nice words. So I'm just going to go ahead and read this, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, go for it.
Kat says, "Hey guys, love the podcast. Tonight on my dog walk, I was listening to the embalming episode, and since I seem to be on a one-woman mission to correct misconceptions about formaldehyde, see this piece I wrote last year." She linked an article that I'm going to attach also in this episode description that was really helpful and really cool. She said, "I wanted to point out that formaldehyde was not used in Civil War embalming. Its fixative properties were only discovered in 1893, at which point it became involved in preserving people, and it was considered the safe alternative to what was used in the Civil War. Arsenic."
Oh.
Yeah. "Arsenic can still be a problem in the groundwater around cemeteries where lots of arsenic embalmed folk are buried. Anyway, sorry to be that snarky person. Greetings from Edinburgh, Cat. I found that really interesting, and I am going to link to that article because...
That is neat, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a little detail that I think we just like very briefly mentioned. I don't know if that might have been like the photography, wartime photography episode that she's referring to. But yeah, that is an important little detail that I think does kind of like, as much as we kind of talk about and critique this current era of damaging the environment through how we preserve dead bodies.
Yeah.
That's an interesting rabbit trail that I don't know if you would want to research that for a future
alternative embalming methods.
Like,
that's really neat.
You know,
I didn't know that.
Neither did I. So, Kat, thank you not only for the correction, but also I think you've kind of put us on a path to learn a little bit more about something that was a blind spot for us. So you have no reason to apologize. You are not snarky at all.
Absolutely
you were actually
not.
Very helpful. So thanks for sending that message our way. If you want to support what we do with this podcast, we know times are tough. We know that finances are pretty tight for a lot of people, depending on your situation. So do not feel pressured in any way, shape, or form. But we are accepting donations on our Patreon page. If you go to patreon.com/predeadboys, you can pledge to give $1 or $5 a month, and you can get some extra bonus goodies on there. Good news. We actually hit our goal of a total of $100 of donations per month.
Yeah, we did.
And we are going to start having bonus episodes every month exclusively for our $5 a month patrons on Patreon, where we're just going to cover music, movies, games, books, just pieces of culture, modern culture for the most part, and kind of discuss it from a death positive perspective, but also just geek out the way that Max and I always do. Anytime we record, we have to edit out like nearly an hour of us just gabbing about the stuff we're listening to or watching and consuming. So it'll be nice for us to have an outlet for that. And I think it would be a fun little extra bit of content for those of you who are super generous and supporting what we're doing here and helping us cover costs.
Absolutely.
But yeah, just want to give a shout out to everyone who has given us money through Patreon or Ko-fi. That's been awesome. That really does, you know, we're starting to talk about what to do with finances and like how to figure out all the fun stuff like taxes and the boring shit like that, because we have a pretty cool chunk of money that we get to do cool stuff with now. So just want to thank each and every one of you for getting us there. And even the people who didn't donate money, I know a lot of you have just been supporting the podcast in all kinds of ways and sharing that with people. So we appreciate you all just as much.
Absolutely.
Just want to give a special shout out to Adam Nichols, who upped his pledge from $7.50 a month to $13.50 a month.
Aw, that rules.
And Mike Nooner, who upped his pledge from $10 a month to $15 per month. Both of them helped us cross the finish line there with their increased donations alone. So thank you guys so much for that.
Yeah, from the bottom of our hearts, that rules.
Absolutely. And also want to give a shout out to SC, who started pledging $1 per month. Just every little bit helps. And yeah, just thank you, SC. I have to assume that that is the entire state of South Carolina, that that's what SC stands for, and that we now have a government grant of $1.
We're getting tax abatements.
Yeah, $1 per month to make this podcast. I assume that's what that is. I'm probably right about that. Anyway, thank you guys so much for all the ways that you've supported this podcast. If you want, you can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. That gives us a little boost in their rankings, gets more eyes on our podcast, and we'll also read your review here on a future episode. And if you listen on Spotify, why don't you share the episode that you listen to in your Instagram story or on Facebook, or use one of those nifty little share features that they got. Just tell people about this podcast. We don't advertise. We rely entirely on word of mouth for every bit of success that we've had so far. We don't want to pay for advertising. We would like to continue just having this cool network of friends sharing this project that we get to do thanks to all of your guys' support. So thank you guys so much. Thank you for giving us something really... Thank you guys so much. Thank you for giving us something really fun and exciting to continue doing through what is the weirdest time in our lives up to this point. We really appreciate you. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com or on Spotify or wherever you listen to music. Just look up Brat Curse. Also, their singer, Brian Baker, has just released some solo stuff that I have yet to listen to.
Oh, neat.
But that is worth looking up as well. So maybe I'll share some of that stuff on our Twitter or, you know, other social media. And yeah, we'll have more stuff to listen to while we're hunkered down in homes and trying to figure out how to survive this thing. And that's going to do it for us. Max, this was sweet. Thanks for being flexible with the technology.
Yeah, hopefully we get back to more of a normal state after this week. Once we get back into a groove with how things are going to operate for the next, like, month. But
we'll see.
I don't know. It's weird. Thanks for bearing in there with me.
Yeah. But one thing is for sure. Whether or not we get over this plague, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, you're going to rot. And that's just great news, isn't it?
Joyous. Joyous news.
All right. Thanks, y'all. See ya.
How about you describe it to me?
You sounded like a weird Dom. Matrix. So, don't sniff at me.